I've visited almost every site at least once, and every single time I leave a meeting about intensive assistance or I leave one of those schools, it provides me with like this jolt of hope that we can get to that transformational change that is needed within the system.
This is Dr. Jenny Wright. She's the assistant director in the Teaching, Learning, and Leading Center at the California Collaborative for Educational Excellence.
Fillmore has that because they are going through it as a whole system. But historically in schools, the discourse is around trying to improve what already exists and kind of being stuck in that lens and feeling like the sandbox has four very kind of narrow walls. And I see in our intensive models, it's really like going from problem to possibility. And the things that they've begun to question in Fillmore about what could be and what if, and like, what if we're the problem? Like, what if it's not the kids? What if it's not the community? What if it's us? What if it's the system that we've put in place? What if that's the problem? And what could it be like if we changed that? That's the type of discourse that we want to see in every school, because it's that kind of questioning and that type of discourse that is going to create lasting, sustainable change.
Yeah, I had a teacher, actually a counselor, say to me, Keith, she was like, not here, another school, says, Keith, you know, when is good just good enough? I'm like, what? Like, that's insane to me. When is good good enough? Like, we're in education, we're with kids and student achievement. Like, we just got to keep pushing, just little things.
Yeah.
Keith Derrick just completed his second year as principal of Fillmore High. His story of good enough is something that pervades our thinking in many areas of our lives. It's a defense we often deploy when we don't feel like doing the hard thing that we know deep down the task at hand requires of us.
It's a fine dance. Our profession is a difficult one, ever-changing, and quite frankly, it's expanding.
And that's Fillmore Middle School principal, Carlos Valdovinos. In our prior episodes, we established how vital our teachers are to the education system. But just because they're a teacher, that they're an authority, doesn't mean that they don't need help, that they aren't people, just like you and I. We may call them everyday superheroes, and they are, but they're still human. They need coaching, training, support, all to face the very difficult, personally challenging professional responsibility of facing their own participation in our systems of education, systems that are steeped in tradition, and the concept of good enough.
It's really going back and taking a look and a step back and a step aside to say, do we have the system to be able to make improved outcomes for kids? And we realized we didn't.
So how do we overcome our bad habit of using good enough when it comes to teaching our kids or engaging with our parents and communities? And when we realize that good enough is no longer an answer, what then becomes necessary? Welcome to Rising from the Margins, Episode 5, Chapter 4, Fillmore Unified School District in Fillmore, California. I'm your host, Byron Watkins. If this is your first time listening to Rising from the Margins, welcome. We hope you'll go back and listen to our previous episodes. There are many themes that we are building on here, and they will help you discover greater context for some amazing things happening at the schools we have profiled. There is a theme that has sort of emerged organically out of editing this episode, and it is the concept of knowledge. Synonyms for knowledge here would also include tradition, thought, memory, answers, the way we've always done it, good enough. I'd encourage you to consider the word knowledge as you listen. You'll discover many instances where it's being discussed and questioned, but maybe not always overtly. People wrestling with its value and its meaning. This is Fillmore Unified Superintendent Christine Shefferly, former graduate of Fillmore High. This will be her third year as superintendent.
in Fillmore Unified, if we're asked, what are we focusing on? What are you guys doing here at Fillmore Unified? We're doing three things. We're focusing on student learning versus teaching. We're focusing on developing a collaborative culture because we know we can't do this alone. And as teachers and staff, we can't be in our classrooms with our door closed. We need to work together. And we're focusing on results.
Fillmore is located in Ventura County in the Santa Clara River Valley. Maps tells me it's exactly 55 miles northwest of downtown Los Angeles. It's a small town, just under 17,000 people. And while close to many urban areas, the valley it's nestled in is beautiful. Driving in, I was constantly in awe, and its location makes it feel tucked away and uniquely special. Its district is a K-12 that serves a 78% socioeconomically disadvantaged and 24% emergent multilingual learners. When Fillmore Unified came to CCEE, while they did not qualify for direct technical assistance, they did want extra support and extra help. So it was another opportunity for CCEE to provide the intensive assistance model to a non-direct technical assistance district, similar to Madera Unified, featured in our very first episode. Again, Jenny Wright, who you heard in the open. She's been working side by side with Fillmore throughout this process.
There's a hunger out there for districts that are needing support, aren't quite out direct technical assistance because we don't want to wait, right? It's like the healthcare system, like preventative is always better than waiting until you have the heart attack and then like, oh, well now I'll treat you even though I knew you were gonna have a heart attack 3 months ago. So this was a really great opportunity for us to be able to do that for these two particular districts, Fillmore being one of them.
CCEE was really just getting started with this work. And they were only set to do it with Fillmore's middle school when
I had my middle school principal give a presentation on the support he was receiving, as well as the type of support his school would be receiving, the coaching, literacy, mathematics, and assessment. And before the meeting was over, all of my principals said, why not us?
And that's how a year ago, not just one school, but the entire district jumped on board the intensive assistance model.
So if to oversimplify the whole model, learning, collaboration, results through four questions. So all the work is funneled through those three foundations and pillars. And that's been the game changer.
This is the first school district that we have spoken to that wasn't just piloting it at a school or few, but has expanded it district-wide. And the results aren't just good. They're kind of outstanding.
I got here last year at our math department, and all math grades across, I think it was like 62% D's and F's. It's what I showed up to last year, like 62. That's all math grades. That's even advanced placement, all math grades, every single math class. And within a year, I think, our progress report came out, we're down to 20, 24%. From 62 in a year.
And Fillmore High School, in 1 year, has seen so much academic growth that it was recognized as a California Distinguished School, thanks to the intensive support they received.
The work is constant. It's not a one and done or a five and done. It's embedded throughout the school year. It's regular work so that what we're doing is becoming the Fillmore way. The way we do business in Fillmore Unified. In the past, I think we haven't done is spend the time looking at the system. And so in order for this to work, there are a whole lot of things that needed to happen.
There's a level of vulnerability. I mean, you have to be willing to say and live with that discomfort, like, I'm part of the problem, right? Like, and it's not me in particular. I mean, this is the system that we built and like improvement science, right? Every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. So in a way, it's like, I don't understand why we're surprised. We're the ones that built it. This is what we're getting out of it. But it's really hard for people to take that step back and to kind of have that mirror perspective. And I think what this work does is it gives people the agency to make significant change, right? To say it's okay to let that go. It didn't work. It's okay for us to try something we've never tried before. So I think this model gives people that agency and that permission, if you will, to try new things.
Like many schools, Fillmore is faced with its fair share of problems. Budgetary issues, declining test scores, absenteeism, the ripple effects of COVID, and on and on. How does a school solve all of these seemingly endless and growing problems? How Fillmore decided to start solving them was to take these matters into their own hands.
Instead of focusing in on all of the challenges ahead of us, the learning loss, we acknowledged those, identified them, but we focused in on opportunities that we could take coming back. And with monies that were allocated to the district, COVID monies, instead of buying things, those shiny objects, we made sure our kids had, curriculum and all of that. But the significant investment was in professional learning for our teachers.
Now, one could say, yeah, of course Fillmore can do this. They're a small district, only 3,600-ish students and only 7 school sites. But this kind of thinking would just be excuses. The important thing to ask would be, what is necessary to do this work at an entire district? What would it take? And one of those key things to understand is teacher and stakeholder buy-in. If we care about changing our schools, we have to participate. We cannot just stand back and pontificate.
It wasn't central office. It was the principals coming and saying, this is good. I think this could be a game changer in our district. Can we do this? And so we said, do you know the commitment? And they said, we're ready.
So that's what Superintendent Shefferly did. She invited folks into the schools to take a front row seat to witness the intensive assistance model in action. Board members, admin, and staff who otherwise would only read about this process or hear about it in a presentation were now participating in what challenging the system actually looks like. If we don't participate, it's much easier to pretend that we aren't part of the problem.
And that's the allure of the work, is being in the schools and seeing it versus a brand new, spanking new, shiny curriculum that has its bells and whistles. This work is different. It's deep, and it's having direct impact on students, but you got to come to the schools and you got to get into the schools and into the work to see what's happening in classrooms and in teacher leadership teams to know what the work is.
Last year was my first year here at this school as principal. My 15th year or something. So came in and we had to make some change. And that's why I came, because it's kind of what drives me. So we really wanted to get into what's called PLC work, professional learning communities. And I think people throw around the word, oh, we're a PLC, and they use it as a verb, or you know, we're PLCing today and we have a PLC meeting. That's not what that is. It's kind of the idea of your whole school community is a professional learning community. In order to do that, we have to do all these things.
Learning communities is going to take time, because it's not a surface level change. It's this deep, we say, core out change that we're doing here. We're changing the way we do business. We're shifting these systems that have been in existence for years, and we've flipped them over and said, what if?
Well, what if? Maybe you heard this one. An older daughter calls and asks her mother, hey, why do we cut the ends off the roast before cooking? And the mother says, honestly, I don't know. Your grandma always did it that way. So they call grandma. Grandma laughs and says, my roast pan wasn't big enough. What is the point at which we no longer have a good reason for why we do what we do? We just continue doing what was told to us, what we learned, i.e. old knowledge.
I think historically in education, we throw so many initiatives at people, right? Initiatives to a teacher is an expectation of what I'm going to do. And we don't provide a whole lot of support to do that. And one of the things that has stuck with me since the beginning with intensive assistance is when you provide educators with the appropriate amount of support for the expectations that you're providing, they will rise to that occasion. And the intensive assistance model provides an exorbitant amount of support, but it's also a huge expectation of how you behave in schools. And it is, in a sense, dismantling what you've done. If you're a 20-year educator, it is dismantling a lot of what you've known for 20 years. And also having to overcome, because then you go through the initial like guilt and shame of like, oh my God, like 20 years of kids I've done a disservice to, right? I mean, like we've all done that. If you've been an educator, you go back and, you know, like once you know better, do better kind of thing. But there's always a certain number of kids that stick with you of like, I did that kid wrong. And I wish I could have that kid back now that I know what I know and the experiences that I've had. But it takes a lot of support to ask somebody to do something they've never done before and to dismantle a system that works for some. Why doesn't it work for everyone?
But now our focus is singular, right? It's daunting, but it's singular. It's just one thing. This is what we do. This is what our school is. This one thing causes us to do all these other things. But it's always still that one thing.
When our teachers, our staff have those skills and the confidence, they feel efficacious, that they can make a difference. And so that's been the difference, is we didn't bring in a bunch of curriculum in new programs. We said, we believe in you.
We just compressed the system and the process into about a year and accomplished what maybe some schools can't, it would take 3 years to do. But I don't want to speak for other schools, just maybe the schools I've been in, we just did this highly compressed, which takes a lot of trust amongst teachers and staff. And we have a dedicated collaboration every Wednesday for an hour where teachers get to collaborate in teams and in departments and to do this work, because it's a lot of work. In fact, it's so much work that some of our staff were talking about we really need 2 collaboration days a week. Now, for me, I smile because sometimes in some other schools, maybe teachers don't want to collaborate, right? Education's pretty isolated. It's been for years. I have my room, I teach, tradition. I go home, right? Tradition. But now we're collaborating as a department for what's in the best interest of all students.
But don't let the words hard work scare you off. Remember what the teachers have told us in prior episodes. It's hard work, but it's good work. Work that unfolds teacher clarity. It changes teachers and their relationship to teaching. They've told us that they will never be the same. We've discovered many things that unfold from this work. Collaboration, coherence, culture, leadership, wholeness, and meaning. All necessary ingredients to create a thriving school. We've also seen that any school site, no matter its location, district, or population, is not immune from a loss of these very important qualities. They have to unfold from somewhere within the school site. But the only way for them to be truly sustainable is if they unfold from the teachers. So, schools and teachers, with the help of the California Collaborative for Educational Excellence, CCEE, along with its support partners, are reshaping the system, creating the foundation for what each school site now unfolds from, asking every day, many times a day, those 4 simple yet personally challenging questions. What do we want the students to learn? How do we know if they've learned it? What are we going to do if the students have learned it? What are we going to do if they haven't?
And as professionals, we're going to invest over these next 3 years of bringing folks in and helping us deepen our learning, help us expand our learning. And we know we need coaches because we don't know it all.
See, I think like when you say, I don't know, What do we want kids to learn? I don't know. Well, that's a scary spot to be in as an individual, right? Because then the self-reflection comes in. So maybe I don't actually want to say that or think that.
I don't know. It's interesting what answering I don't know, even when you feel like you do know, does to how you look at a question. We certainly feel or sense that we don't know the answer way more than we say it out loud, way more than we actually admit it to others. But by answering I don't know, it puts us in a vulnerable place, one that can allow us to look at a problem anew. If I don't know, I kind of have to go back through and look at all the parts to see what's new. It also unfolds dialogue with my peers, where we all are looking together, open to whatever the answer may be. That's the other thing. How often do we really look at problems? Usually, we just find a way to avoid them. Good enough.
You said something which is actually reminded me of kind of a funny story. I'm in first school, so it must have been 16, 17 years ago. I was principal at this science teacher doing a lab. Says, I'd love you to come by and check it out. And I'm in a lot of classes, so I'm like, sure, I'll come by. And she goes, you know, it's like my favorite thing every year. I love it. But, you know, every time I give the assessment afterwards, like 80% get D's and F's. And so I'm like, so why are you still running that lab? And she was like, huh? And I'm like, you know, it's kind of what you were talking about. Like, I know it's supposed to work. And so every year I do the same lab every year, but it's actually not working.
I read an interesting idea this weekend that what we call our unconscious mind is just the stuff that we choose not to look at. It takes being aware of it to bring it to the conscious. But then once we see it, the question is, do we do anything about it? Once again, middle school principal Carlos Valdovinos.
The shift of any school culture, kids usually will follow if it's good. It's the adults who are set in our ways that sometimes require the extra finagling or convincing or sometimes a good old-fashioned series of dialogues until they eventually see, you know, the value in what initially they may have not.
We believe that all kids can and will learn at high levels. And we've gone further to say, what are high level? It's grade level and are above. So when you work in Fillmore Unified, we believe all kids learn at high levels, and that's grade level or above. And so to be part of this, that is one of our core beliefs.
Culture eats policy for breakfast. A very simplistic way of saying that at the end of the day, you can put out there the best formed plan, but if you don't have buy-in and the stakeholders felt they contributed to that, it's going to be dead on arrival.
We believe hope's not a strategy, so we're not going to hope our way into improved outcomes. That we know that the work has to be intentional. We do not blame kids, and we make decisions based on research and practice and what we know works, not solely on what we believe might work. And so those are conversations that happened early on, and those are tough. That we're going to hold each other accountable if we're working together and we start blaming kids. Who's going to be the one to say, time out? And I've seen this happen where staff is called a time out and said, you know, we need to stop right now because we're blaming kids. And we made a commitment that we don't blame kids. So let's take a time out. Let's refocus our conversation. And those are difficult. But when you, again, establish your why, your intention, your purpose, that becomes part of culture as well.
And so at this school, I'm real pleased to see that we seem to be in a good place as far as, you know, regarding this instructional gains.
If it unfolds from a place of where it's happening organically,
right,
the culture's being created out of what we're doing,
that's correct,
it's going to be much stronger. The buy-in really is just that ability to sort of let go of the past, is what you're describing, right? So now the culture that's unfolding there seems to be unfolding with the kids, and that's organic, and you can't buy or print that kind of culture on a wall.
Nor can you take some canned program and then instantly implement it. The fact, that's a great word, the fact that it is, I think, an organic homegrown or just generated from within, and being very intentional about seeking the input of all teachers and even kids. We also got kids involved in the process.
Here's Superintendent Christine Shefferly.
Yeah, it's coming from within schools through developing teacher leaders at each site who are now feeling motivated, empowered, that they can together make an impact. So that's been really fun, cool, if you want to say, to see that from the outside. And that's the teacher aspect of it, the teacher leaders. And again, this is very layered. That's happening out at the grade levels, at the departments.
As Christine says, it is layered. And the beauty is, the work at Fillmore just keeps unfolding additional layers. As the team, dropping ego at the door, questioning old knowledge, coming together, looking at how they're creating problems at the school, and finding new ways of solving problems for the betterment of their students. More from high school principal Keith Derrick.
Yeah, you don't want to say, well, no one comes after school to the tutoring, so I guess they just don't do well. Well, we can't control what goes on before school and after school, so then we can control what's here. So now we're going to build this system for questions 3 and 4. What do we do if they don't know it, and what do we do if we do? Ours is called Flash Forward. Our mascot's the Flashes, so we call it Flash Forward. So we built a 45-minute period in Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, and Friday. And so what we do is when the kids take that assessment in class on that essential standard, if they didn't do so well, well, now if it's English 9, our teachers are setting up, well, all the kids that didn't do well on this standard, you can go to, you know, these three teachers who are going to reteach it to you and retest you, and we can move forward.
This is asking what is necessary. If we can't control what is outside of school hours, how do we create new systems within school hours?
Why do we have to keep it this way? Like, right. And have we ever really asked ourselves why we do it this way and then been willing to sort of stop and go, like, if the answer is dumb, right. Well, why can't we change it? And I think a lot of this work, this collaboration work, is putting all of these traditions, i.e. the old systems, on the table and kind of going, like, if this is what's really happening, do we just keep doing it this way? Or we're asking ourselves what's necessary, and what's necessary that you guys have, a way you've seen to solve it is to sort of say, let's put the time actually within the space that the student's actually required to be here and see what happens.
Yeah, and things are happening.
You know, we've always said we know our kids are great, our staff is great, but what we are seeing in our district and what we saw in Fillmore High School is that students are growing, that we have fewer students who are 3 years below grade level, 2 years below grade level. Our students are moving. And that was done in an extremely short amount of time at Fillmore High School. All of our schools saw growth, not the growth that Fillmore High School did.
Fillmore High School, this year in 2024, was recognized as a California Distinguished School for their academic growth in the 2023-2024 school year.
Quite extraordinary in a year that you could, I mean, it's, you get the California Distinguished School based on the previous year's work. And so we have like 6 metrics. I might get that wrong, but we have an English metric, we have a math metric, suspension data, chronic absenteeism, college and career data, EL data, and all those metrics, you have to actually achieve at a certain level and grow at a certain level. And so we met all of those. And my understanding is for the first time in the school's history. So we did that all in 1 year, which is, now the pressure's on.
And so we were the only middle school or high school in Ventura County to be designated as a distinguished school. And it is a result of our California dashboard.
You know, it's validation of the work. You know, sometimes you can get lost in the work, and then all of a sudden it was a nice surprise. Wow. You know, we knew we had done some good work, but it validates the work that we're doing.
All of that improved, it unfolded out of this core teacher-student relationship. Teachers improved relationships, with each other created clarity, which created better relationships with students.
Right.
Where students also, in the same way that the teachers were like, yes, this is awesome because we're seeing results. Well, the kids are coming to school because they're also like, oh, I get the meaning of this because I get to see the data. I see that I'm improving. I'm getting a purpose out of this. And then all of this other stuff just starts to go like, well, why don't kids come to school? Like, why do they get suspended?
If they're more engaged, if their classes are focused, those metrics, if you say, are not independent of one another. There's that engagement, that school culture, like you said, the relationships with students, the clarity of our instruction, which impacts student learning. When students feel more successful, we saw DF rates go down. It's everything's working together for the benefit of the student.
And this is the questioning of the system at work. Questioning how each of the parts fit together to create the whole. Fillmore is beginning to understand how each part fits.
At times, we try to separate those and treat them like independent factors where we're focusing solely on improving math scores. That's nuanced in many ways, and there's many other factors that impact that, whether that be language arts, suspensions, attendance, school culture, student relationships, engagement. So it's building, I guess going full circle, right? Building a coherent system and identifying what is coherence, what does it look like, what does it sound like.
Big U2 fan, probably seen him like, I think, 55 times. There's a line in one of their, before their first albums, we thought we had the answers, it's questions we had wrong. And that always resonated with me in like education. We get bogged down in all this minutia, like how are we gonna lower suspension rates? And so we try all these things, but that's really, it was the wrong question.
Yeah.
Right? If I had 100% of my kids in AP classes, I bet you suspension rates going down, right? So, you know, is open access and teacher-student relationship a better way to get at suspension rates? But if we just look at the suspension rates or whatever, chronic absenteeism, we're asking the wrong question. So what's the big lofty thing that we can do?
We thought we had the answers. It's the questions we had wrong. Answers would be another way to say knowledge. What we know. But if we know we have the answer, what then is left to question? What is even open to questioning? On one hand, knowledge is what we're always seeking. It is our knowledge that gives us power, status, prestige, self-worth, and agency. But on the other hand, our knowledge is the hindrance. It is the block to understanding what is happening right now. Are we really listening, or are we listening filtered through our knowledge? Knowledge, then, is a paradox. If what we know creates who we are, it's no wonder we have so much trouble questioning it. This means we must not confuse knowledge with understanding. Aldous Huxley wrote in his essay entitled Knowledge and Understanding, "Knowledge is acquired when we succeed in fitting a new experience into the system of concepts based upon our old experiences. Understanding comes when we liberate ourselves from the old and so make possible a direct, unmediated contact with the new, the mystery, moment by moment, of our existence." He also said in the same essay, "We cannot make ourselves understand. The most we can do is to foster a state of mind in which understanding may come to us. What is this state?" Thank you for listening. This series was brought to you by CCEE, the California Collaborative for Educational Excellence, whose mission is to help transform public education so that every student is left inspired and prepared to thrive as their best self in the world. If you would like to learn more about CCEE, log on to ccee-ca.org. Rising from the Margins was written and produced by Winsong Productions, with additional production support by Parsec Education. We have a part two on Fillmore coming. I spoke with teachers and students that we haven't even met yet. We'll learn more about their Flash Forward program and hear about some old education knowledge that they are questioning. Old knowledge that most educators would consider fully solved, fixed, tacit, known. Good enough. We hope you'll join us.